Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So now Brahma has created this ignorance, right? Because this is the basis of how everything's going to function. Without this, you actually can't have material life. Right, so, he said here. Yeah. Okay, so without, it means there must be false identity, right? Because if you don't identify with this material body and situation, how do you have material life? Right? It actually is very essential. If you don't identify, you can't do these things. Right? Otherwise, how do you have a good conflict, right? Unless you identify with it, you know? Does that make sense? Like that. So therefore then the false ignorance must, so the first functions of ignorance appears. So these are just aspects within ignorance itself. Right? This is just from the page before, from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So in succession, Tamas, Moha, Mahamoha, Tamistra, Anda, Tamistra are created. Right, so you have ignorance, then you have egoism. Because if there's ignorance, then I can identify that I'm the body. Right, I am this, I am that, I have an identity. From that, then you get attachment. Because if I'm this, then what's the whole point of having an identity? I'll make choices in which the mind will act, right, and the senses will act, right? Mm-hmm. Like in the fourth stage of the mental process, the reasoning process, then you're going to, with your ego, make a decision, right? So if the ego is material, then you'll make a material decision for a material goal, right? And if your ego is spiritual, then you'll make a spiritual decision for a spiritual goal. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the whole thing, is it has to be. And then, so that means that goal is what you're attached to getting. Does that make sense? So therefore that. Then, from not getting that, you get hatred. And then after that, you get absorption and material pleasure. So we can understand this generally from our attachment, ego and attachment, our endeavors end up in hate rather than pleasure. Seeing that the next item to manifest is hate rather than pleasure, right? No, and pleasure is the next to manifest. If it doesn't work out, okay, then hate develops. No, hate's the first thing, you know. Because there'll also be envy, you know. Even your endeavor hasn't fructified yet. It hasn't gone bad, but just that others have, right? So it's just inherent that people have to fight and create trouble and everything like that. Okay, and then Prabhupada then gives these how it's going to apply. Means just, in other words, there's the logic of manufacture of these items, but then there's the actual how the living entity becomes entangled in them. Right? So then the first thing, as Prabhupada mentions here, is tamisra, anger has to be first. So there must be envy. Right? Because I don't necessarily have an identity. I don't have any of this. I haven't gotten any results. I'm envious that someone else is having and I'm not. And then the whole thing can start from there, right? Like that. Okay. Then. So then that's by the relationship with the Lord. But it's not so much about the ego. as it's ignorance of my actual identity, but it's based because it's generated because of envy. This makes sense? Then we're going to create identities. Right? But our general concept is why him, not me. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not it's technically an identity. Underlying, yes, I should be the controller and enjoyer, but it's what you want. But you don't have it, so there's anger. Does that make sense?
Like this. Okay. Undetermined, then, considering death to be the ultimate end. So then you have the point of their sense gratification, the people who are most absorbed in sense gratification, then the idea is that everything ends at death. Right? Because how can you be so absorbed, you know, in everything, in sense gratification, if there's a concept that life goes on after death? Because if life goes on after death, then if I'm behaving badly, I'm going to get a bad result. But if it's all finished, then I can... Does that make sense? So that means also then the greater the attachment, all these things, they all go together. So there's more of a fear of death. If there's no fear of death, then these other things don't function. Right? Does that make sense? So if we understand, I'm the soul, not the body, I'm going on to, you know, whatever is the situation from the benefit of my activities, then there's not a problem. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Then, okay, this is, okay, under to Mishra. Then this is due to ignorance. Why would we think that there's no that the body is the end when the body is finished? Is that because we don't actually know, right? So we see it's based on that. But this is what you'll be conscious of. You're conscious of that I'm angry and the body is the end, right? And I want sense gratification, right? But it's the underlying is ignorance. So it does go back to that original. Right, that the manifestation of how it's Brahma is creating it, so there must be ignorance first, but it's not, you're not conscious of that. Does that make sense? You're just working along, though it's based on that. Let's say you have the person doing high jump. Okay, what are they conscious of? Right, they'll be conscious of their technique to jump higher. But what's the underlying element? It's gravity. So they're having to do something that they, you know what I'm saying? They know I'm trying to do something to, do opposite of the gravity, right? Because, you know, to get higher means you have to be less affected by the gravity, right? You know, momentarily. But all that work for, you know, just one moment. It's amazing, right? You know? So, but that's not conscious, but it's there to have the whole process. Why is high jumping a big deal? If there was no gravity, what would it matter? You know, you sneeze and you're in New York. You know, just, you know, like that. You know? Does that make sense? So, because it's there, then these things come up. Because of ignorance, then it comes up. But the actual thing where it's going to manifest in the consciousness, then is going to be this anger and desire for sense gratification, and therefore thinking that the body is the end. Right? Death is the end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, and then from that, then, okay, this is my body, so anything connected with the body and everything, so the bodily identification. Right? And then what you want to do with the body. Right? And then you also get the illusion comes up, right? So I am this body, so you have this ego. And that makes all the different, all the different social functions that we deal with. It's mentioned here, sectarian societies, families, nationalities are created, and they fight with one another. Right? Does that make sense? And then Mahamoha, be mad after sense enjoyment. Right? But that means you're attached. Does that make sense? So they're making these subtle differences between the attachment, and that's the generation of of sense enjoyment, and that, how you say, that feeling that death is the end of everything, so therefore then one is can go on in sense enjoyment. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
So Maharaj's five form of ignorance are fully connected.
Yes, each other. Each one's, they're all connected together. So that's why then we'll work on the ego and knowledge, right? Because if you work on the root, that I understand actually who I am and all that, right? Then from that ignorance, then I can move on to the next, right? Because the next one will be the identity. Right? Success and moha, okay? Moha, egoism, right? If I get rid of ignorance, I can then reassign my egoism. So that means it's going to change my attachment. That means it's going to reduce or get rid of the hatred. Yes. Yes. And then there's no absorption in material pleasure. Right? So because the difficulty is we're not going to attack the envy because we don't even know it's there. But we can start with the intelligence and work through it mechanically. Right? Does that make sense? Just like if I'm spontaneously dealing with the subject matter, I see the situation, see the result I can get from it. Right? And then I make a plan and do it.
Yes.
Right? That's the natural. Yes. But if I don't know anything about it, I have to be taught what the field is, then what you can do with that field, therefore what results you can get. Does that make sense? So logically, I'm going to go through Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. But in actual practice, I'm going to go through Sambandha Prayojana Abhideya.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Because in other words, there's the path that the mind follows, the path that the intelligence follows. They're complementary. But the point is, a sense, spiritual is, even though it's our natural position, it's not our practice. So that's why then we're going to have to go through it by intelligence, that this is what I should be doing. So it'll be intellectual, it'll be theoretical. But if it's theoretical and it's accepted by the mind, then I will practice it. Right? So, as you know, I deal with it and I'm convinced from so many angles, and the mind will come up with all these different things. So it can say, no, but he's really intelligent, he doubts. No, that's not the point. He's using his intelligence, but the doubt comes from the mind. Right? Okay. This is a blanket. This is a stone. Those are bricks. Did you hear of any desire, any need there? That's intelligence. The mind. Oh, that blanket looks warm. This, you know, it's okay, stone. You know, those bricks, you know, have some chips in it. You know what I'm saying? So then I'm adding into it my feelings on the matter. Does that make sense? So, when it comes to spiritual life, technically we don't really have any feelings, or not anything necessarily of any importance, right? Is that like that? So we have to use intelligence and just logically go through it. Then, by logically going through it, we deal with all the doubts of the mind. The mind is convinced. Then the mind accepts that, okay, the spiritual endeavor is good, right? So now, but we have this foundation in the technical points. Then we're able to apply it. Yes?
You said in spiritual life, you said we have technically no feelings. What does it mean? No feelings at all, or no feelings like you?
It would mean that whatever concepts we've had of spiritual before coming in contact with the bona fide knowledge coming in parampara has basically been mental speculation, right? There's an inherent desire for the soul to know and to be eternal and to be happy. But they're using the faculties of the material mind and intelligence. So whatever they're going to come up with will actually not be spiritual. You know what I'm saying? Let's say the person goes out into the forest.
I'm not interested in what's here. I don't understand what's there. No feelings? It's spiritual?
No. That we're talking about ourselves being in material consciousness, that when we're going to approach the spiritual path, it's not going to be from natural, spontaneous spiritual feelings. It's going to be from material anxiety that I'm not doing very well here and I want to do well. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we're not really having spiritual desire. Means as such, we have a desire for spiritual, but it's not necessarily that our desires are based on natural spiritual feelings. Right? Does that make sense? As we develop in spiritual life, then they are. Right? And the spiritual world is fully about spiritual feelings and everything. Right? Does that make sense? But what I'm meaning is that, so basically intellectually we're going to have to accept the process. Right? And then, intellectually accepting it, then we're going to start applying it. And then from applying it, we're actually going to get the results and the taste. So as we go, the more we go, the more we become inspired, you know, not on the intellectual platform, but on the factual platform of our feelings. Right? Does that make sense? In the beginning, I know I should be doing this. I should be practicing devotional service. But with time, I like to do devotional service. Right? So that's not a material whim there of the mind. That's actual, real, spiritual sentiment. Does that make sense? Now, even though it may have the effect of still being occasional, but when it's there, it's real. But when it's steady, that's when we'll say, now this is has substance to it. You know, I mean, you know, as, we'll say this is the practice is developed here. But even the smallest amount of spiritual interest is real. You know what I'm saying? But to make it consistent, you know what I'm saying? It's like the person does their yoga in the morning, like that. It was a great 10 minutes. Actually, 7.5. They say 10 to their friends, right? Like that. And that includes getting the mat out and everything. So it was actually only 4.5 minutes. But they felt great. You know, the more serious ones, they put in 20 minutes a day. Does that make sense? So it was great. And then after that, they get back to work and do all the other things. You know what I'm saying? So it's not there for long. Does that make sense? But it's all, yeah. So when one takes up spiritual life, it's going to be the glorious moments are occasional. But because that's the desire, that's the endeavor, that's the effort there, you know, our thoughts, then that will become gradually more and more stable. Does that make sense? Yeah. So what we're saying is that it naturally comes up. So when all these things are there, then we can see I can work on envy. Otherwise, intellectually, I know the philosophy, I'm not the body, I'm the soul, right? And so then, I'm not actually the doer, Krishna's there, any abilities I have, like that. Okay, my attachments, you know, these aren't actually, you know, permanent, so, you know, I connect them to Krishna and all that, you know, and what do you call it? You know, I like these devotees, these ones kind of annoy me. Like that. And, you know, if things are going great, I'm happy. Right? But with time, then you can actually grab here. The point is, if I can, once we get purified and understand, then I can give up this envy. So then I can have a proper attitude towards devotees, dealing with devotees, the Vaishnava etiquette and all that. That's then going to start the rest of it actually being real. Right? I've studied it intellectually in its natural order of manifestation. But when I'm going to apply it practically, I got myself in by starting with Tamisra. Right? I'm going to get myself out by getting rid of that one. I get rid of the envy, then I'm not worried, then what's the need of the ego, the ignorance, the attachment to the sense gratification, the fear, where's the need for that? Does that make sense? Yes.
Ego comes first, then that means that it's going to go last. Is that correct? Means it's an origin of us being here, so it's going to take...
Yes, and that's why then you have Sarup Siddhi, where basically you're, you know, fairly well adjusted with your actual identity, and then Vastu Siddhi, that's all you have. Because right? Otherwise in Sarup Siddhi, you can be there and be here. Does that make sense? Though on that platform, here doesn't really mean much. But there is that difference where then Vastu Siddhi means there's only there.
So that means that the last traces of ego.
Yes, because all these subtleties of... Means when you're on that platform, on the platform of bhava, these don't exist. It's just the fragrance is left. So it's extremely subtle. But when you're dealing with, you know, the ultimate perfection, it's enough to notice,
yeah.
Right? But you don't really hear much about that in, like, Vaikuntha. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the bird is shot by the hunter. And it falls to the ground and is flapping around on the ground and going around in a circle like that. And then after going around in a circle like that three times, then it develops, you know, a forearm Vaikuntha form and goes back to Vaikuntha, you know. And the others that are watching that are going, how did that work? You know. Yeah. So then they go over and they look. And the area that the bird was going around in the grass there was a Shaligram Shila. Right? So at the time of death, then the bird was worshipping the Lord, so it went to Vaikuntha. You know what I'm saying? Somebody says? And we don't hear much else beyond that. They go there and, you know, I'm sure there's some training and everything like that, as we'll see with Gopal Kumar. But at the same time as the fineness of what you have to remove is not there, because you're not dealing on the most subtle platform. You're dealing on transcendental platform, so it's perfect. But Braj is then most perfect. Does that make sense? Yes. So therefore, there's a concern about these subtleties. Though the acharyas will talk about them, even the others, but it's not as much a concern. Yes.
So Vaikuntha will be basically white. Not rag, not a lot of rag involved.
Vaidhi, yes, Vaidhi. Yes, no, it'll be Vaidhi. Because it's not, because raga means you have to give up all these kind of things. Because Vaidhi means there's still the consideration I like to express through this way. While rag means it's just a matter of what pleases Krishna. So you have a spontaneous position within Vaidhi. That's because the Lord, you know, it means in the form of Vaidhi, this is how the Lord likes to be worshipped, right? So therefore, he likes to be worshipped this way. I do that naturally. But it's still the form remains there. So it's not as, the restriction is greater. But the other one is just trying to please Krishna. It's not about a rule how to please Krishna. You know what I'm saying? It's like there. Okay, the Lord is pleased by his bath, so therefore I want to make the arrangement for the nicest bath and all that, so I have this wonderful asan and all the different things and paraphernalias and, you know, all arrangements that I can make. You know, wonderful smells and people playing music and the highest quality ingredients and paraphernalia and like that. So it's all that, but it's all for the Lord, so it's perfect. But it's that I want to express through that. But in Braja, it's just about pleasing Krishna. It's not about a form that pleases Krishna. It's about pleasing Krishna. That's all. Now, because of that pure desire, what they do in that spontaneous position, that becomes the basis of the rules of Vaidhi. You know what I'm saying? So their rag generates the Vaidhi. Not in themselves, but for others. You know, so we're using the opposite way. We're following the Vaidhi, you know, to generate rag. Now, these, it couldn't work unless they were connected. Right? You can't generate one thing out of another unless there's some connection. You know what I'm saying? Driving your car and getting somewhere have a connection. You know, driving your car and ironing your laundry don't. You know? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that there has to be a connection. So that means the Vaidhi has to be coming from Rag, because Vaidhi can't produce Rag. So that means Rag must have produced Vaidhi. Does that make sense? Since that's the original position. Krishna and Braj is the original position. And everything else is expansion. As the more we expand, then the more you see kind of the rules, regulations, and everything go in. Yeah, now this is the fun part, right? Now, you would think is, now, the concept is good, but why in a hot country? Right? It should be where it's cold. Then you have yourself a nice, you know, thick, you know, how you say, you know, camel wool burqa, right? You know, not where it's boiling hot and then you have a burqa, right?
Small detail.
Small detail, yeah. So, does that work? I mean, what we were talking about, not the burqa part.
A burqa also works.
Okay. You know, it's like the Eskimo, the other little thing. Okay. Okay, so is this kind of make sense? So this is the meaning that in the Shastra there's no contradictions. Because so, oh, but it's created this way, but probably explaining that way. No, they all go together. There's a logical understanding and natural progression, but there's the point where you have to start. Right? Just like we were saying, in Sharanagati, it has six stages of in surrender. But to start the process, you start in the fifth. If you don't start to identify yourself as a devotee of Krishna, why will you take up the process of devotional service? Right? I'm only going to take up what's favorable and get rid of what's unfavorable if I'm identifying as a devotee and I'm able to reduce the ego. So, then I can do it. So that's the preliminaries. Does that make sense? Let's give another example. Just like, let's say, in martial arts, you have a technique, and then from that, you may end up on the ground. Okay? Now, generally when they start teaching those kind of techniques, they start by showing you how to land on the ground. Right? Because otherwise, you take the technique and you don't land on the ground properly, then there's not going to be a whole lot of practice of technique. Right? You know, unless you're, how you say, really want to become expert at setting fractures or something like that. Or, is that what I'm saying? So you're starting there, though you can say, well, that's the end. But that's where you have to start, because the point is unless the end can work properly, how is the beginning going to function? Does that make sense? So, therefore, Shastra is never contradictory. They're just showing the different angles of how something functions, right, for a particular reason or purpose. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can we say that in this study of this four form of ignorance, it's mainly two...
Five.
Mainly two approach. Shall I have five for one?
No. It's just you're talking about how you fell into it and how it's created by Brahma. Right? So in other words, just how the things are going there. And then there is the how you're going to fall into it, but also how you're going to get out of it.
Yes.
Right? So Prabhupada's showing how we fall in.
Yes.
Vishwanath's pointing out how we're going to get out.
Okay.
Right? So it's the same thing.
Yes.
So it's not Vishwanath this, Prabhupada that. It's just there's only one vision. Just since Vishwanath pointed this out, then Prabhupada points that out. Otherwise, why make a commentary like that. Like, I can't remember what the book was. I saw one book once, done by some, you know, Hindu wala. And it was something that says, you know, the verse would say, so choosing a suitable place, you should sit in your asan, you know, in the appropriate asan and meditate. Then the commentary. So then one should think about, and according to the situation, he should then, you know, pick a proper place to sit. And then, you know, according to his, you know, then he should pick his asan, and then sitting in that asan, he should meditate. It's exactly the same. All he did was just, you know, because the verses are done so they're concise. All he did was throw in some more conjuncts and a few things like that. So that's the whole point, is that if the one acharya has already explained one thing, it's, if that's completely clear, you explain other things. If it's not, you bring out what's there. You know what I'm saying? And then, like that. So that's why in the commentaries, no one, there, it's, yeah, does that make sense? And it should be applicable. So what Prabhupada's talking about is what's going to be applicable, because we can understand. You know, I start this, so if I reduce my envy, then I can actually get out of ignorance. Right? Like that. Is that? Yeah. Okay, so continue. Yes. Yes, they're above ignorance, therefore there's no contradiction in anything they say. So that's why it's said, is that if you can resolve the difficult, what's the seeming differences, then that's what you want to do. We don't want to, the speculators, for them, if there's a seeming contradiction, you know, bingo, it's made their day, because now they have somebody to talk. So, you know, what do you think? Jiva Goswami is saying this, but then, you know, Rupa Goswami says over here that, but then Vishwanath says, you know, and then they go on. So what do you think? You know, what does it matter what I think? You know, the point is what are they thinking? That's what I'm supposed to try to understand. It's not about, okay, they have their opinion, what's your opinion? That's not the whole. He said, yeah. Maitreya continued, out of disgust, Brahma threw off the body of ignorance. And taking this opportunity, yakshas and rakshasas sprang for possession of the body, which continued to exist in the form of night. Right? Because something that's generated has its tendency to continue, even though there may be a transformation. That's why only devotional service can actually remove completely the mundane. Because otherwise, then what happens is the material will remove a certain degree, but not completely. Like here, he's given up the body, but that body remains as night. Right? So there's something here for the yakshas and rakshasas to grab onto. Yes.
Previously, he also gave up his body in between four moons, the same.
Yes, the same principle. So in other words, the particular body that's there, when it's dropped, then it becomes a particular aspect of, you know, so then fog, night, all these things, is there's a connection with ignorance there, right? So that you can't tell, you can't see, you know, and if you have a foggy night, that's the worst, right? Or you have heard the term, someone asks you a question, you know, if you know something or how to do, and he says, I don't have the foggiest. Right? You know, it just means I don't have the foggiest idea. This is like, you know, let alone ideas, just even a foggy idea. Right? You know, so it's understood. They're connected with ignorance. Here. Okay. Night is the source of hunger and thirst. It's interesting. Maybe that's why the midnight snack. Overpowered by hunger and thirst, they ran to devour Brahma from all sides and cried, "Spare him not, eat him up." Right? But these are two mentalities. Right? Brahma, the head of the demigods, full of anxiety, asked them, "Do not eat me, but protect me. You are born from me and become my sons. Therefore you are yakshas and rakshasas." 19 to 21, Srila Prabhupada writes,
The demons who were born from the body of Brahma were called yakshas and rakshasas, because some of them cried that Brahma should be eaten, and others cried that he should not be protected. The ones who said that he should be eaten are the yakshas, and the ones who said he should not be protected became rakshasas. Rakshasas, man-eaters. So there's the one thing is you take advantage, and the other is where you don't protect. Right? So now, okay, let us just slide it over a little bit. Okay, now, let's say someone is very dynamic in economics. You know, and he's so good, we say he's cutthroat. So what does that mean? No, you're eating him up.
Yes. Oh,
the yaksha. Yeah, yaksha. So that's why it looks different, because it says here the rakshasa is the man-eater. So he's the one that actually physically eats them up. But it's because he doesn't protect them. The other one, he may leave you, but he takes everything. You know, sorry? Oh, no, I was thinking, because the yakshas, actually the head yaksha is actually in charge of the banking for the demigods. Like that. The yakshas are extremely, they manage all the wealth of the universe. You know, like that. And the funny part, no, they don't eat people. Rakshasas eat them. Like that. So one gets the money, one gets dinner, right?
So they work together.
They seem to be friends here. Slightly different interests, but like that. But, you know, yakshas are small and all that. And I don't know what's the thing about banking and small guys.
Small and fat.
Yeah, so out here there's the dragon, and there's somebody holding up the dragon. That's a yaksha. You know, they're kind of short and pudgy and curly hair and like that. But that's what they. Yeah. I haven't told anyone, but his name's Shlomo, right?
It's a very prestigious position.
Yeah, no, everybody gets to see him like that. No, he does a good job. He's there. He's well respected. Like that. The representatives of the yakshas and rakshasas still exist in some countries of the world. Like that. It is understood that such uncivilized men take pleasure in killing their own grandfathers and holding a quote-unquote love feast by roasting the bodies. I think he was talking about Burma there or something. No, yeah, Burma? No, that was another thing. Yeah, there's some place where when they get too old, they can't function, then they have a sport of actually killing the guy, and then they have a feast and eat him. Like that. Africa?
Some part of Africa.
Yes, it's popular. Right? But the idea is, in their mind, they're honoring him because whoever you eat, you're taking on their qualities. So he's worth, you know, he has good qualities. He's worth eating. I think it was when who was that first group? Maybe it was. I can't remember who went there. Captain Cook or. You know.
Yeah, Cook.
They ate Cook. Yeah, okay. So then they went there, and the locals, then when the next ship came, the locals went with the bones, all nicely cleaned and polished, and to give to them out of respect, that they respected Cook. That's why they ate them. Right? And then they couldn't understand why the guys in the ship were so upset. We respected him. You know, hey, you know. Yeah. Okay. He then created the chief demigods who were shining with the glory of goodness. He dropped before them the effulgent form of daytime, and the demigods sportingly took possession of it. Right? So night the demons took, day the demigods took. Right? So the day is for all the auspicious activities. That's why night's better for sleep. Right? You know? It's like you said, you get a little hungry, you know, have a snack,
you know, do something stupid, you know, sit around and waste your time, and then go to sleep, you know, so it matches nicely, you know. So that's why the demon, then that's when you get up, you know. Life begins after dark. I think I mentioned when we were in Greece, you know, we've gone to bed in that, and every night at 11 o'clock, everybody, you know, it's quiet until then, and everybody goes out, you hear everyone kind of like that. That's when life starts. They go out and party until 4 in the morning, right? And then when we're getting up, they're all going to sleep, you know, so, yeah, so, like that.
Okay. Lord Brahma then gave birth to the demons from his buttocks, and they were very fond of sex. Because they were too lustful, they approached him for copulation. The worshipful Brahma first laughed at their stupidity, but finding the shameless asuras close upon him, he grew indignant and ran in great haste out of fear. At first he thought they were joking. When he figures out they're for real here, then he runs. 22-24, Srila Prabhupada comments, sex life is the background of material existence. Here also is repeated that demons are very fond of sex life. The more one is freed from the desires for sex, the more he is promoted to the level of the demigods. The more one is inclined to enjoy sex, the more he is degraded to the level of demoniac life. So that just naturally goes back and forth. As we see is that, how do you say? Therefore, the position from unregulated to regulated to reduced to not at all, you know, within the material confines, right? Because here it's all about sense gratification. That's the thing. It's not about, how do you say, yeah. Does that make sense? Because in the spiritual world, then the activities of the rasas are based on it's pleasing to Krishna. While here it's based on it pleases me. And naturally, whoever pleases me, I am comfortable being around. Right? Does that make sense? So that creates all then the family, community, all these different things. Right? So it's different. That's why here, then it's always a matter of reduction of it. But on the spiritual platform, that's not a problem. Right? You know, here it's like we may be trying to be simple in our eating and everything like that. But in the spiritual world, you see, that's not a problem at all. Right? So it's very elaborate, very, so it's like it's not a problem. Of course, there they don't have to worry about gaining weight. Right? Madhu Mangal could go on eating eternally and still remain the same. So, you know, it works out. Is that that's why then the more one is attached to this direction, then the more the mentality is demoniac. And the less one is, then the more divine it is. So we see even up to Indra and all that, then they're doing better than the demons because there's some sense of the duties and all these different things like that. Not because it generates sense gratification, but they're still attached to sense gratification. So it's mixed, but then when we went to the planet above that, to Mahar, then that wasn't there at all. They weren't attached to sense gratification. Right? And then higher than that, we're then on top of Loka, and then we haven't gotten to Brahma Loka yet. So you see, what's happening is that less and less attachment to. So the ego, everything becomes less. So all these five elements of ignorance then are reduced. Right? Does that make sense? No? Yeah? Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, then in Brahma's mind, lust, the mentality of rajas appears. From that the demons appeared. From lust arises great evil. They pursued Brahma. Right? So here is that lust, if you increase that, it just gets worse. It's not that it makes anything better. So that's why it has to be reduced and controlled. Right? Does that make sense? Because it entangles us. That's the whole thing. So that's what the regulative principles are for. These four things are what entangles us most easily, what we're so distracted by. Right? That's why they're focused on. Not that the activities themselves are specifically the problem.
it's our attraction and attachment to them and how quickly and easily and thoroughly that happens. That's why we're avoiding these. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Brahma, he approached the personality of Godhead, who bestows all boons and who dispels the agony of his devotees and those who take shelter of his lotus feet. He manifests his innumerable transcendental forms for the satisfaction of the devotees. Footnote 1. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, quote, Brahma mentally approached the Lord and then made a request. This is understood but not stated. Lord Brahma, approaching the Lord, addressed him thus, My Lord, please protect me from these sinful demons, who were created by me under your order. They are infuriated by an appetite for sex and have come to attack me. My Lord, you are the only one capable of ending the affliction of the distressed and inflicting agony on those who never resort to your feet. 25-27. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 26, It appears here that the homosexual appetite of males for each other is created in this episode of the creation of the demons by Brahma. In other words, the homosexual appetite of a man for another man is demoniac and not for any sane male in the ordinary course of life. Right? Because it's not about the natural course. It's simply based on sense gratification. Like that. That's the principle. Right, so that's the difficulty in it. Because one can say, no, but what about the affection and this and that? But it's pretty much based on the sexual appetite. Because if that's not going well, the relationship doesn't go well. Like that. From what I've heard is that it's more delicate, that kind of getting together in relationship, than the standard male and female, and that's really difficult. You know, like that. Because if something goes wrong in that whole unfolding of sense gratification, then it just breaks down immediately. Well, the other one, because it's a natural position, then there's always hope that, you know, somebody's going to get it together and it'll make it work again. But the other is the determination is that, therefore it's much more. Does that make sense? So it's going beyond the things of, you know, friendship and this and that. Because in the Vedic sense, the closeness that men can be as friends is much greater. Right? In India, you know, men are walking down the road holding hands or take a nap on a bed together or eat off the same plate or these kind of things. These are just considered normal. Well, in the West, that would be considered a bit weird. Right? Yeah, so therefore then, it's already what is that closeness can be there without having to add the sexual element. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's where he's pointing out is that it comes up from the demoniac mentality. Does that make sense? But the position of Krishna consciousness doesn't matter where you start from. The point is to be Krishna conscious. And then whenever it's unnecessary, all that will naturally be dropped. That makes sense. Right? Yes? No? Okay.
Yeah. So it means those who claim it's natural because it develops so early in the creation means it's natural for demons.
Yes, it's
not
natural for demons.
For...
No. Because in other words, the demoniac mentality is there for how to take full advantage of these five principles of ignorance and really absorb yourself in the material creation. Like that. So you can say that's natural. That's natural from the conditioned platform of someone who's trying to go away from the Lord and away from self-realization and become more and more and more entangled. You know? But then if you want to go the other way, you want to become enlightened. No, you haven't go back to Godhead. Then you have to take it the other direction. So you can say it's natural. You know, just like it's natural for small boys to be covered from head to toe with mud. But, you know, you don't generally leave them that way. Yes?
Is there a similar thing for women?
it's slightly a different topic. I mean, meaning that it's, I mean, the principle, when you increase desire and need, then it comes up. But it's not a, let me see. It's considered more of a circumstantial, right? Just due to lack of actually what would be considered proper is not available or working. But because of the need of interaction and closeness, then it arises. You know what I'm saying? And then if the other comes up, it naturally shifts. But if you have the situation where they're dedicated to this and that and they're like hard line, then you would say that's the demoniac mentality. Because then they're actually taking on a masculine role of, I'm the, you know, enjoyer, controller here. So it's really about the sense gratification rather than the emotion. You know what I'm saying? And so then it then you'd say that there's, that would be then in line with this. But the other is considered, it's not ideal, but it happens. Does that make sense? So there's a difference in dealing with it. But at the same time, it's not taken that seriously by the Vedic culture. You know what I'm saying? It's just understood, this is not going to be very useful for spiritual life because this is going to be very entangling. Right? In other words, if the masculine-feminine is going to be entangling, this masculine-masculine is going to be more entangling. Right? Because the man and woman, they have to have their house, this and that. But, you know, in the beginning, they, you know, I want this and I want that and this curtain and that curtain. But with time, they get involved and, you know, getting everything. And then these things kind of like fade a bit, you know. But when you're, does that make sense? But when you're dealing with this masculine, every moment, everything has to be perfect. Otherwise, you know, there's a meltdown. So the absorption is so much greater. So the distraction by these five aspects of ignorance is just stronger. That's why it's not recommended. That's what we're saying in the Vedic. If it goes beyond what's the natural thing, it doesn't have as much effect because it's part of the scene. You know, it's just like in India you have the hijras. It's just they're part of the scene. You know, at the wedding you invite them. You know, they're just part of the scene. That's all. You know, it's like, does that make sense? But in the West, because they're talking that they're more liberal, but they're actually more less liberal, and therefore to express it, you have to be more extreme. Well, in India, you can do anything. It's like, I mean, so many times you see in the city or anywhere, some guy walking down the street totally naked. Nobody even cares. They just really don't care. You know, in the West, it'd be a whole scene. It'd be on the 6 o'clock news. There'd be pictures in the newspaper. You know, it'd be a whole. They're just, who cares? You know? So that's the whole thing. It's broader. That's the fun part. It's broader, but therefore, to be broader, you have to be restricted so all that broadness can function together. Well, the West is actually more narrow, and therefore they can't accommodate. So therefore, then there's all these things in the name of liberality that are actually very extreme. So that's the whole, you know, it's the balance is wrong. Mm-hmm. Yes?
There's a joke in Sydney that sort of shows the sense gratification of the gay community. They say, what does the gay man bring to the second date? His boyfriend. And that's how it goes.
Yeah.
You see it.
No, it's does that make sense? So we don't, it's not, if someone has this mentality, it's not a problem for us. It's just a matter of it has to be reduced like anything else. It means if someone has, I mean, in other words, if Casanova became interested in Krishna consciousness, we would recommend that he's a little bit more selective here.
Yes.
You know? you know, ideally one, you know. Okay, you know, yes, sorry for the other 9,999, but you know what I'm saying? It's the same principle. So it's not that we're, you could say, anti-materialistic commitment. You know, we want to encourage the cultivation of spiritual upliftment. So those things that are favorable to that, that's what we do. And things that are not, doesn't that see? Does that make sense? You know, like that. So it's just, these are the facts, you understand it, and then you deal with it accordingly, like that. Does that make sense? You know, because as one devotee from this kind of background made the point, he says, what does it matter as long as you're celibate? Says, you know, whether you're gay or not, if you're celibate, it works. You know, so his point was is that, you know, it's all stupid. You know, so when you come to Krishna consciousness, then you get it together and do what's right. Yes.
Yeah, I just heard that yesterday from somebody. He said exactly the same thing, and I was wondering. Yeah, it works, but the mentality is very different.
Yeah, but the point is the positive elements of the mentality you can use. You know what I'm saying? Like in general, you see is because of that absorption more, then their values in their skills and prestige and everything is greater also.
Yeah.
So then they can use those skills for in Krishna's service, you know, to please Krishna. So therefore, you've perfectly engaged that mentality in Krishna's service. And so then they advance very nicely. So that's the point, is it doesn't matter. It'll have weaknesses on some side, but it'll have strengths on every position that has a strength and a weakness. So, because ultimately it's all an illusion anyway, so it doesn't matter. But at the same time, as we don't encourage, because we don't want to encourage illusion. But the point is whatever point in the illusion you're at, that's the point you start and connect that to Krishna. So that's why, actually, it's really hard to tell. Are we conservatives? Or are we liberals? You know what I'm saying? So and you find that generally, if dealt with properly, both like us. So. And if you don't deal properly, neither like us. Okay, so basically we see is that the divine mentality means that one's interested in God consciousness, one's moving forward in that direction. Demoniac means one's not interested in that, so therefore one's moving away. That's the basic principle, yes.
Regarding that, and Kubera's position is divine, demonic.
No, he's a demigod, so he's there. It just doesn't mean that the followers are not, you know, have their issues. And there's like Lord Shiva, of course. He's a demigod. But his followers, the Gunas, then some of them aren't what you call your ideal, they're antariksha. Right? So they're that in between.
Right. So this means when it says the Rakshas and Yakshas are the demons, it's more of
a mentality. Yes, because otherwise you have those who are not, just like mentions the demons worship the Lord. So Prahlad Maharaj is one of those demons that worship the Lord. He's in the demoniac family, but he himself doesn't have the demoniac mentality. Does that make sense?
And then so when Surya Narayan's going around and they have the 12 stations and they have the Yaksha and Rakshasa, those are Rakshasa Yakshasa by birth, but
They're performing their duties, so they have something that they do there. It's not that the yakshas and rakshasas aren't part of the celestial scene. It's just a matter of how, whether they can cooperate or not.
Okay.
You know, like the demons have their scene and going on. No one's having a problem. The demigods don't go down there and make a problem. The difficulty is when they get too proud, because they increase this material mentality, the demoniac mentality, then they come up and try to take over heaven and, you know, create problems and all like that. But if they live their lifestyle where they live, no one minds. You know, just like the tribals, they live out in the forest. They do whatever they do. They have their unique rituals and lifestyle. That's not bothered, as long as it doesn't bother anybody else. You know, like they want to eat each other, fine, but don't eat the city people. Right? You know, like that. Does that make sense? So it's left. So the idea that a mentality is able to be that could be played out, that's fine. But it should be, one wants to connect everything to Krishna. Does that make sense? So people have relationships and this and that. That's fine. You just don't want it to go into the demoniac mentality. It's just based on sense gratification. You know, it should be higher than that. That there's about the individual people, and that those people are engaged in Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? Because Krishna consciousness is personal, therefore, preliminary elements, you're discussing about how to be personal, how to be nice, how to have proper relationships and that. But it's not about being nice and having relationships in the material world. Right? It's about being God conscious. Does that make sense? So it's just like, how do you engage cooking in the Lord's service if you've never heard of cooking? Like that. But the whole point of cooking is not in itself that it's something special. It's that it's useful in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So we're saying here's whatever the positions, whatever the relationships, that's not really the problem. The problem is if it's based on sense gratification. So bringing it up to the level of proper personal dealings and then Krishna consciousness. So, you know, we do it simultaneously because otherwise where's the qualification? Does that make sense? It's not that we're necessarily greatly pious people, that we're just so wonderful anyway. Right? It's a matter of we are... Krishna consciousness cultivates that proper mentality, so we're able to uplift ourselves and come to the higher standard. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, it doesn't matter what is the position of a relationship, as long as you can bring it to that personal and Krishna conscious level. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah? Yeah, okay. The Lord, who can see distinctly the minds of others, perceives Brahma's distress and said to him, "Cast off this immature body of yours." Thus commanded by the Lord, Brahma cast off his body. 28. Srila Prabhupada explains.
Again?
Hmm?
This happens again?
And again, and again, and again.
So easy to be Brahma.
No, I know we're thinking it's, yeah, he just sits there and, you know, enjoys lunch, four heads at once, you know. You know, each one could be eating a different cuisine, right, you know. You want to eat the, you know, your mother says, you know, to eat your salties, you can't have the sweet, but then you could be eating the salties and eating the sweet at the same time, right, you know. You're only eating junk food. No, only one mouth eats junk food. You know, so it could work out pretty good. Now that's a problem. We didn't think of that one. Yeah. Okay. So. Wow. Okay. Yes. Yes. I think there's the preliminaries in the very beginning, because he's talking about what happened after this. But then once that's there, the principles are in place, and detail has to be done every day. But the principles don't. Like the ignorance, he's created this once, he doesn't necessarily, maybe he has to do it every day. But the point is, you know, it's pretty standard. It's not necessarily he's chased around by the yakshas and rakshasas every day. I get the idea that's the original. And then after that, then you don't have...
Yes.
Because right? You're starting from nothing, so then... There's a, yeah. Okay. Srila Prabhupada explains, the Lord is described here by the word vivikta jyatma darshana. If anyone can completely perceive another's distress without doubt,
it is the Lord himself. If someone is in distress and wants to get relief from his friend, sometimes it so happens that his friend does not appreciate the volume of distress he is suffering. But for the Supreme Lord, it is not difficult. The Supreme Lord is Paramatma, is sitting within the heart of every living entity, and he directly perceives the exact cause of distress. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Sarvasya Chaham Hridi Sani Vishtaha. Bhagavad Gita 15:15. I am sitting in everyone's heart, and because of me, one's remembrance and forgetfulness occur. Thus, when everyone fully surrenders unto the Supreme Lord, one finds that he is sitting within one's heart. He can give us direction how to get out of dangers or how to approach him in devotional service. The Lord, however, asked Brahma to give up his present body because it had created the demoniac principle. According to Sridhar Swami, Brahma's constant dropping of his body does not refer to his actually giving up his body. Rather, he suggests that Brahma gave up a particular mentality. His message is here, constant. So it's not whimsical, right? It's consistent, right? The mind is the subtle body of the living entity, right? Because from these, it generates things. Right? So for Brahma, the subtlety is generating all what we're seeing. So giving up that mental body works. But it also has application, as Prabhupada mentions here. We may sometimes be absorbed in some thought which is sinful, but if we give up the sinful thought, it may be said we gave up the body. Brahma's, right? Because otherwise it will continue, but you stop thinking in that way, that means that path of thought stops. So that means that particular aspect of subtle manifestation disappeared. Right? Because the mind can tap into any aspect of the universal form. So it's just, what do you want to tap into? Yes.
Sometimes when the past memories or whatever they come up, you feel you become impure.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't indulge in this, it's the same principle.
Yeah, it'll go. It means things come up, and because that's just what the mind does. You know, it just you know, drags things out of, you know, wherever the archives are, you know, like that. And when they come up, then you just let them go. Then it's gone. It doesn't stay. But if you dwell on it, then it stays. So even though it comes up, you don't feel. But you're dwelling, so therefore it maintains that feeling of impurity, right? But if you just let it go, then it's not. Yes.
Is it a future body?
Is it the future body? Oh, means from that angle, means what future results may be there. Yes, but no, you're giving up in the present. Because it's at present what you do. Future is based on the present. So if you continue with that, that will generate that form. If you adjust it, then it will generate something else. So it's in the present, not in the future. Right? So,
I can understand the point of
so, but that, you see, right, that's there. But the thing is otherwise, at the present, if it's giving up the future body, then if at present you're thinking of what happened in the past, and then you give that up, and then in the future the person doesn't exist anymore. You know what I'm saying? If you're a screenwriter, it might work. Right? You know? Add in some, you know, special effects and, you know, a few million bucks and it works. But in reality, no, you're dealing in the present, and what you do at the present is what generates the future. So it's not that you're giving up the future. You're giving up the present. That will affect the future. If by looking at it, by thinking in this way in the future, that will create a problem for me, then that's fine. But it's not that what you're doing now is that future thing is there. Otherwise, if that's there, then that means the past things are there, and then it starts to get a little weird. Does that make sense? Yeah. more? Brahma's mind was not in correct order when he created the demons. It must have been full of passion because the entire creation was passionate. Therefore, such passionate sons were born. It follows that any father and mother should also be careful while begetting children. The mental condition of a child depends upon the mental status of his parents at the time he is conceived. According to the Vedic system, therefore, the Garbhadan Samskar, or the ceremony for giving birth to a child, is observed. Before begetting a child, one has to sanctify his perplexed mind. When the parents engage their minds in the lotus feet of the Lord, and in such a state the child is born, naturally good devotee children come. When the society is full of such good population, there is no trouble from demoniac mentalities. So then he's bringing out this whole thing, is that here he's just generating. Right? Because this is there'll be a point where Vidura asks, okay, now I've heard about all those who have been generated, like from his mind and different parts of his body. Then he wants to hear about, okay, then from this point, then it appears that everybody's generated by the standard method. Right? So then how does that creation work? Right? Because before this, it's all he's thinking and all these things happen. But, as pointed out here, depending on the mentality of Brahma, as Sridhar Swami is pointing out, that mentality then generates that kind of children. So because the mentality was more passionate, he generated more passionate children. Right? So in the same way as that for the human beings, that if the husband and wife, then there's the mentality is not passionate, then you'll get that kind of child. It's more passionate to get that kind of child. So that's the whole. So that's the science of the Garbhadan Samskar, as Prabhupada mentioned. It's not just a ritual, but it's a science. So it understands the mentality and all this. Then it generates good population. If that's the majority, then the society goes nicely. But if the demoniac mentality or the passionate mentality is more prominent, then it always creates trouble. Because as we see, Brahma's there peacefully doing his job, and then these two come along and want to eat him. Right? Really hard to carry on your respective duties if someone's, you know, gnawing on your leg or something.
You know? You need to feed your children.
Huh? Yes, but there's other methods that you could do like that, yes. Yeah. The body given up by Brahma took the form of the evening twilight, right? So he had night, he had day, and now he has twilight. When the day and night meet, a time which kindles passion. Right? So that's the thing, is the night was more ignorance. The day was goodness, the demigods took that, and the twilight is passion. So that generates, okay? The asuras, who are passionate by nature, dominated as they are by the element of rajas, took it for a damsel, whose lotus feet resounded with the tinkling of anklets, whose eyes were wide with intoxication, and whose hips were covered by fine cloth, over which shone a girdle. Her breasts projected upwards because of their clinging to each other, and they too were contiguous to admit any intervening space. She had a shapely nose and beautiful teeth. A lovely smile played on her lips, and she cast a sportful glance at the asuras. Adorned with dark tresses, she hid herself, as it were, out of shyness. Upon seeing that girl, the asuras were all infatuated with an appetite for sex. 29-31. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 31. The difference between demons and demigods is that a beautiful woman very easily attracts the minds of demons, but she cannot attract the mind of a godly person. So, because the idea is that if the beautiful woman, then the thought comes up as enjoyment. So that's coming from the demoniac mentality. Right? Does that make sense? Well, the demigod mentality then means, how do they engage in Krishna service? Like that. Because they have beauty, they have intelligence, they have all these things. How can they use that for Krishna?
Right? So that's the difference in the mentality. So yes. Yes.
In the descriptions of heaven and Indra's place, it's mainly about nice ladies dancing and they drink the somaras.
But you see that it's, yes, there is, I mean, on two points. One is that we see is that Indra is up to a certain level. So you see, it's the best that you can get materially where you're following the scriptures for getting that benefit. Does that make sense? So at least they're following authority. While here, it's just unbridled. We're talking about the demoniac mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But we see is to go higher than that, then there must be even control in this area. But as you go up, the women are like on Maharloka, it means Indra's planet, they'll be the most beautiful within the three worlds. Right? But you could go up to Mahar and that, they'll be more beautiful than them. The features of everyone there, and that will be much greater than even of Indra and them. Otherwise, why would they get jealous? You know? So it's greater, but it's not interested in sense gratification. So the greater, the more it moves up. Because otherwise, one may have from previous karma good facilities, good birth, good you know, beauty, all these different things. But if one doesn't use them properly for a developing one's piety, then they'll be lost. Is that, yeah? So you have there, it's kind of in between. It's the best of what it is, but that's why then from there, then they come back down here. You know, it's not necessarily from there they're progressing. Not there. Plus, you see, is that the dealings and the interaction is much more refined and that than you would have in the more demoniac kind of mentality.
Yeah, I was thinking also that it's really difficult to be Krishna conscious when you're surrounded by beautiful women and you drink all the time. It's kind of, you know, distracting.
Well, that's why it's recommended become more serious and don't go there. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, then what it means is that you've come in contact with Krishna consciousness where it's so serious. But the piety from it generated, you go to the heavenly planets. After that, then you come down and take birth in, you know, a good family, educated, aristocratic, noble, you know, some kind of religious family. Not devotees, but these. And so, but your nature is actually to be involved in those higher elements and underlying in devotional service, but it hasn't been developed very much. And so you're not actually appearing in devotee families. Does that make sense? So then, where could it go from there? So easily you could go down. Right? Well, if you're more serious, then instead of going to the heavenly planets, then you just take birth in a devotee family. And so then it's so much easier to become Krishna conscious and move forward. Does that make sense? You know, and then that naturally is going to be by the consciousness of the parents. You attract that kind of soul, so more serious parents generally have more serious kids, less serious parents have less serious kids. You know, the tree and apple, you know, analogy, yes. Yeah. So like that, then it's there. So there's a lot more going on than we understand.
Yeah.
You know, we just think we're, you know, a rag, you know, what do you call it? Ragamuffins? Ragtag. Yeah, like a ragtag bunch of, you know, social misfits that, you know, somehow or another we are able to take up Krishna consciousness because we don't really make it anywhere else, you know, so. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's actually the whole universe is running because it's Krishna's universe. It's all connected with this principle of devotional service. It's just how far one's gotten or how much one's not interested. Like that. Well, we take it as, you know, it's all about us, you know, but it's no. We're able to take part in a much greater, you know. Is that? Yeah. Yes.
What what happens if one parent is very serious in Krishna consciousness and the other one has no interest and they have a child?
Then you get mixed. Whichever is prominent, you're going to get. You know, in other words, boys generally take on the mother's mentality, girls take on the father's nature. Like that. You know, so it'll be mixed. So you cultivate, you'll go either way. So that's why it's recommended that combination be made based on equality. Right? So in this way, Vedic literature is all about equality. Right? Does that make sense? So if it's that they are married and they're not devotees, then one of them becomes a devotee. That's another thing. But if you're a devotee, it's not recommended you marry someone who's not a devotee, because then the difference in mentality. It means amongst yourselves it may work out, but you can't guarantee for the kids. So the combination of family has to be considering the whole package. You know what I'm saying? The kids, the families, you know, everything like that. You have to look at all of it. It's not just, oh, it's all about the couple. That's they think it's all about them. You know, what they do, not do, it doesn't matter. Everybody else has to adjust. But actually, no, they're supposed to adjust for everything else. If it's only the two of them, then they can, like that. But as soon as it expands into family, then the family has to be considered in the whole thing. Does that make sense? So if they're not understanding this as future results of them being together, that means then they're not really well informed of how the world works. Does that make sense?
But it happens sometimes that they meet first and then one becomes devotee and the other, I mean, they're married.
Yeah, that's another thing. That you can't do anything about. So the point is then you're at least adding some Krishna consciousness to the mix, so then there's more of a chance. Does that make sense? Because, you know, how it works out, you don't know. Then maybe it's partially, you know, like we said, that pious person, but also, you know, it's going to be very individual, because it says at the time of conception. That mentality, is that what you're dealing with? So does that make sense?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Then the devotee will think of Krishna and the other one will think of Sanskrit Krishna, so then it will be like maybe a person who's...
Yeah, you get a mix. That's why it's why it's not... You shouldn't have difference in mentality. That's why it says someone with a Brahminical mentality should marry someone who's Brahminical mentality. Because then their mentalities are such they'd naturally generate someone with a Brahminical mentality. Right? But if you have a Brahminical mentality and a Shudra mentality, then you don't end up with a Brahmin or a Shudra. You end up with a Nishada. You know, or if you reverse it, you end up with a Chandala. And if you combine that Nishada and the Chandala, then you end up with a, how you say, I think one, you get a Supacha, and if you keep going, then you get a Antavasayi. It means those who are rejected by the rejects. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is it's said you keep it equal. This whole idea, no, but it's love, it crosses all boundaries. Yes, but the point is what about the medium? You know? Does that make sense? There has to be some connection. So that's why in the Vedic they consider all these. Then it's considered, oh, it's so restrictive. No, all it means is that you have to consider all the options. But then, if you want to do that, then as you move up in society in the social strata, there's more and more to consider. Right? So in other words, by saying, no, why all these restrictions? What you're saying is, we want to go down. And if you're saying we're willing to consider restrictions, means we're willing to elevate ourselves. This idea is that by dropping the restrictions, we're elevating society. Where do we see it? right? Means just like before, when? Maybe the 70s? Have you ever heard anywhere in the world, in history, go back thousands of years, where someone other than a occupying, you know, military walked into a school and killed people there? So in this liberalness, this is what you're getting. You know what I'm saying? Before it was, you know, it's like you see old people, kids are playing in the street because no one would run them over. Now you don't do that because somebody's going to come through at 60 miles an hour and not care and run the kids over. So you don't do that. But before, they come around the corner, if there's kids, they slow down, they stop, they honk. You know, either the kids move or their mommies come out and move them. You know, it's not like, you know, I got 3 nanoseconds to get there. You know, it's like that, you know, it's just, you understand? So it's very, so all this liberalness is just dropping the standard of society, because, not because being liberal is a bad thing, but they're being liberal without standards. Vedic is liberal with standards. You know what I'm saying? But the modern is liberal, no standards, and conservative standards, no liberality. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why then one has to consider these things. But if that's the, what situation you're in, then that's what you got. You make the best you can do. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 31, the difference between demigods and demons is that a beautiful woman very easily attracts the minds of demons, but she cannot attract the mind of a godly person. A godly person is full of knowledge, and a demoniac person is full of ignorance. Just as a child is attracted by a beautiful doll, similarly, a demon who is less intelligent and full of ignorance is attracted by material beauty and an appetite for sex. Right, so the beautiful doll, because for the kid, then that's something very real. Right? They have a nice smile and nice eyes, and they like them. Like that. And they interact with them. So, you know, it's a whole thing. But in reality, you know, they say, it's a doll. Right? But in their mind, you know, there's a whole scene going on. Right? The godly person knows that this nicely dressed and ornamented attraction of high breasts, high hips, beautiful nose, and fair complexion is Maya. All the beauty a woman can display is only a combination of flesh and blood. Sri Shankaracharya has advised all persons not to be attracted by the interaction of flesh and blood. They should be attracted by the real beauty in spiritual life. The real beauty is Krishna and Radha. One who is attracted by the beauty of Radha and Krishna cannot be attracted by the false beauty of this material world. That is the difference between a demon and a godly person or devotee. Okay, so our, what do you call it? We can take solace in the principle that, in how you say it? That thing of that, in the Satyayuga, the demons and devotees were on different planetary systems. In Treta, in different continents. In Dwapara, in different families. And in Kali Yuga, in the same body. So if we find some demoniac mentality, but then, you know, there's a possibility, there could be some, you know, other demigod side also. So you, one doesn't have to feel too bad. But it's just making the fact. So, in other words, that beauty is not for sense gratification. That beauty is a result of pious work. Pious work means according to Shastra. So we see that it gets development. But the whole point of it, whatever it is to engage in Krishna service. Right? So it doesn't change the position. So whether one is having all good attractive features or not, still one engages in Krishna service. And still the principle of being engaged in Krishna service remains. Right? So then it's just a matter of, okay, it's a symptom of piety. And if you have an equal, similar kind of piety, then the lifestyle will work fine together. But it's not just about the physical beauty and attraction. Mm-hmm. It's about the quality of nature. That's, mm-hmm. you know, how you say, you know, you're saying. So the funny small people down on Venice Beach, they should marry each other, not bigger people. Does that make sense? Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Yes.
The common thing between a demon and a devotee is like attraction.
Yeah, basically. It's a mentality. That's what makes the difference. Because as we see, the form doesn't make the difference if one's a devotee. Like, Paladmar is born in a demoniac family, but he's a devotee, so that doesn't matter. You know? Bali Maharaj. You know, like this, it doesn't matter. Like, Bali Maharaj is, you know, advising Ravana that, you know, he not continue with his plan of keeping Sita, you know, because he's attracted by this mountain of jewels, huge mountain. And Bali says, you can have it. And so then he goes and climbs on it, looking at it. He's so impressed, but he can't even pick it up. And this is the guy that moved Kailash, right? And then he comes back and says, what is this? He says, this was an earring of Hiranyakashipu. And he was killed by the guy that you're keeping his wife. Right? But somehow or another he's thinking, no, I'll be successful. Right? He can't even lift the earring. And he's thinking, this is going to work out. Right? Hope against hope, right? Yeah, yes.
But if he didn't have that hope, the whole material nature is the problem. This is how it works. We also have the same hope against hope, even though it's not that big earring. Because if he surrendered, it would be kind of not materialistic enough. If he had surrendered without trying.
Okay, that's him. What about us? No, they're there. They've come for the pastime, so naturally that's there, but that's there because that is the mentality in the material world. They just take it to extreme. But for us, is that, you know, it's not that. Well, if I surrender, then how will the material world? I've heard that before. If everybody became a devotee, how would things go on? You know, they always say that. It says, probably pretty good. You know, like that. Yeah. Okay. Quote, the demons praised her. Oh, what a beauty. What rare self-control. What a budding youth. In the midst of us all who are passionately longing for her, she is moving about like one absolutely free from passion. Because that's just the... How you say? That's just how it plays out, right? The guys aren't interested, then she's, you know, interested. But as soon as they become interested, then she's so detached and so this and that. I was in Vrindavan, and we're in Govindamars' neighborhood. So you know, the dogs there are quite, you know, pleasant and all that. So one of the local dogs from there had, you know, during the, how you say, particular month of the year, had picked up a few, associates, right? Yeah. So then there was about, 12 to 15 male dogs following this, you know, female dog around. And they're all trying so hard in this and fighting with each other and all this and that. And she's just so aloof. And then they came along, and somehow or another, because they used to, before, climb over the back fence of Govindamars' place, and, you know, on the way through. So they'd come over there, and then the dog saw me and recognized me as, you know, one of the ones from kind of the scene. and very happily, you know, comes over to where I am, you know, completely ignoring all the other, you know, the dogs, and they're all like, you know, who's this guy? So that's the whole, that's the thing. So that's right. Where self-control? What it just means that she can do this to extreme that they haven't seen other women do. Like that. So she's very sophisticated, very, you know, it's like the, how you say, the point of the difference between the village girls and the girls from Paris. The Paris girls have 1,000 ways to say no, and only a few of them mean yes.
Most of us, when they do say no, it means yes.
Yes.
Majority.
Yeah, but then the more sophisticated, then... Yeah, then it's... Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the whole thing that they're pointing out, is that she's very qualified, like that. And so they're appreciating that. But that means they're so bewildered, so then they take it in this other way. You know, because how you say... the point with godly qualities would just understand that this is just the feminine nature. So then the feminine nature is engaged in Krishna's service, rather than one takes advantage of it. But they're not identifying the feminine nature. They're just seeing the physical form. Is that... yeah. Indulging in various speculations about the evening twilight, which appeared to them endowed with the form of a young woman, the wicked-minded Asuras treated her with respect and fondly spoke to her as follows. Who are you, O pretty girl? Whose wife or daughter are you? And what can be the object of your appearing before us? Well, they want to know the background, because whose wife or daughter are you? Because then if they're wife, then okay, they got to drop it. You know, if it's daughter, then okay, now they know who to approach, right? But what's the object of her coming there? Because otherwise, you know, what's the point, you know? Why do you tantalize us, unfortunate as you are, with the priceless commodity of your beauty? Whosoever you may be, O beautiful girl, we are fortunate in being able to see you. While playing with a ball, you have agitated the minds of all onlookers. Right? Because that's a standard thing, so something to play with, and that always makes it more. Right? O beautiful woman, when you strike the bouncing ball against the ground with your hand again and again, your lotus feet do not stay in one place. Oppressed by the weight of your full-grown breast, your waist becomes fatigued, and your clear vision grows dull, as it were. Pray, braid your comely hair. Right? In other words, it's loose, and they're attracted by it. So they're just saying these things. Right? In other words, everything's always working in opposites. Like that. It's just that the girls are better at it, the boys are a bit clumsy in it. That's all. You know, at least they're making an effort here, right? The Asuras, you know, it's like, clouded in their understanding, took the evening twilight to be a beautiful woman, showing herself in her alluring form, and they seized her.
Huh?
Yes.
Since we took in those Ayakshas and Rakshasas from previous one.
Why, you're worried that the...
No,
they broaden the... I mean, you have to ask, it's a broad category, right? What's it? LBGT, I think, is the full category. So, you know, it works.
No, that's quite refined for men eating rakshasas and short guys.
Doesn't mean that they're not good.
No.
You know.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I always say Napoleon was short. So it's...
Srila Prabhupada concludes his comments on this incident. Oh, well, I guess we conclude the class also.
This is just Asuras, right? It's not specifying the Rakshas and Rakshasas for this?
No, it just says the Asuras. It just means the demoniac mentality. Like that. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, because the Asuras are described here as Muda Dhyā, meaning that they are captivated by ignorance, just like the ass. The demons were captivated by the false, glaring beauty of this material form, and thus they embraced her.
So glaring beauty means because the dead matter doesn't actually have the beauty. That glaring is actually from the Lord's potency. But in this case, coming through Brahma and then manifesting in this way. So that's the glaring. So that's what one's attracted by. So we see is that the more something is glaring, the more it has materially attractive and entangling. Right? Therefore, shopping in Butter Bazaar is not very entangling. You know, shopping in, you know, one of the malls is. The difference being the glare. I never thought about the smell aspect. But even if you took away the smell, then you'd be comfortable?
No.
Okay.
The smell adds a lot.
Huh?
The smell adds a lot.
It adds a lot, but so does the millions of people, and so does all the, you know,
dirt.
The dirt, lack of light, you know, like that. So it's all quite dull.
And the commodities they sell.
No, they sell some good stuff there. If you know where to go, that's the thing. These markets, they have the best stuff there is. But you just have to know where to go. There's 1,000 shops there. You got to go to the right one. And then you don't get better stuff. Like the best spices and the best, you know, all these, you know, not strife use, the best are in those markets. But no glare, so not very attractive.
Like selection, not everybody can go. You need to be determined.
Yes, to be determined, yes. You have to have the piety. Right? Same thing, you have to have the piety to shop in those other places also.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaura Premananda ki.